But so I'm like really proud and privileged to introduce Dailan to you to share her experience, strengths, and hope.
Wow. Hi, I'm Dailan. I'm a recovered alcoholic. So, thanks for having me. I never prepare for these things. I just let God tell the story. And so that's what I'm going to do. Thanks for having me. I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope. So it starts with a dog. It always starts with the dog, yeah. So I believe in legal interventions, and I'm grateful that God used a legal intervention to introduce me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to turn to page 13, and I'll tell you how my dog got me there. So, I was 42 when God separated me from alcohol and other substances, because I was a bit of a garbage pail kid. And by that I mean I put everything into my body. But it started with alcohol, and it ended with alcohol. But on the day that God separated me from alcohol, he used my dog, because I was on the run from the police. I had been entering other people's homes without their permission and taking their things and selling them so that I could buy more alcohol and other substances. Because I didn't have money, because I was homeless and I was living in my car with my dogs. But I had left my dog, Bubba, who's still alive. I love that dog. I'd been living with in my car with my dog, and I'd left him at my mom's. So I was in Tulare County, and I wasn't from this county. You know, I was living in another county. And, but I was robbing in multiple counties. And I just happened to get busted in this county. And at the time, I thought that was hell. And so, and I was robbing in a different city, and I had to go back, and I knew it was a bad deal. I had accidentally entered a home of a police officer, and he was, I was not in my right mind, and I went back into that neighborhood, because I was not in my right mind. I was under the influence. And so, this is a true story. What happened was I realized I was about to get busted for a lot of things. Because, it wasn't just that one day. I didn't just happen to do that one day. It was like a string full of things were about to catch up with me. And so I thought, I'm not going to stay and face any of those consequences. I'm going to leave the state. And I could have done it. I could have just left the state. I had a lot of stuff with me, and I had a pocket full of money and a full tank of gas and a girl. So I was good to go. But I didn't have the dog. I didn't have the dog. So I needed to go back for the dog. And the girl was like, "What? We have everything we need." I was like, "I don't have the dog." So I went back for the dog. And when I went back for the dog, I went right past the police cruiser, the couple of them, because I was like, "I'm going for the dog." And she was like, "Don't do it." I was like, "Yeah, I'm doing it." And I went and I got the dog. And when I ended up at my mother's house, I ended up being detained. And for a long time. So I sat with the dog and I was interviewed for a long time. And that started my journey to recovery. I'm going to tell you that I wasn't grateful that day. I wasn't grateful for a long time. I ended up detoxing and stuff while I was incarcerated. And I stayed incarcerated for a long time. And my sobriety date did not begin that day. I stayed incarcerated for almost a year. And they let me out. They let me out on December 4th. And that became my sobriety date. And I'm going to tell you that I was not familiar with anything. And the whole time I'm incarcerated, by the way, I'm doing what everybody does. I'm telling everybody that I'm going to do good. You know, I was interviewed the day before. Probation came out. I had set up a sweet plea deal. Like, God blessed me with this great plea deal. You're going to go to New Visions. You have an 8-year prison sentence over your head. Like, go do everything. You know, the whole deal, right? The whole deal. Like, it's all sweet. Everybody gets these deals, right? I wasn't supposed to get that deal. I was supposed to go straight to prison and not get that deal. But God had worked it out for me, and I was like, yeah, I got this. And I absolutely believed it. You know, I absolutely believed I'm going to come out and I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And I was always making Pruno, and I was always using other substances while incarcerated, right up until the day they let me out. And this is what happened. My mom, who always believed in me, I hate that. I'm going to tell you, I always hate that. My parents always look at me, my kids always look at me, and I hate that hope. I hate that hope that they look at me with. Because they believe that crap that I tell them. Like, I'm going to do it. You can believe in me. Right? They want to believe me. And the thing is I hate it because I want to believe in me. And I hate that because I love them and I want to stop for them. Right? So what happens is she picks me up on December 3rd, like it's midnight, right? And she's like saying some stuff to me like, oh my God, you have to go check in for probation the next day. And it's at that moment that I realize, they're going to test me. And I just use like literally like 30 minutes before she like picks me up, like before they bounce me out of there. And I'm like, shit, this is not good. They're like, and I'm thinking, and here's me. I have such an ego problem. What I really thought was, oh my God, I just was down for a year and I'm going to have to come back and tell these bees that I'm coming back. And I didn't even like to get to that. Like, he's going to walk me back and I didn't even get to spend 24 hours at home. He's going to test me and I know him. He's going to test me and Panero's just going to lock me back up because I tested dirty in his office. Man, this sucks. Like, that's all I'm telling me. But I'm smiling at my mom going, it's all going to be okay, right? And I'm just like, I'm just trying to get through it. And I don't know. God separated me from booze that day, took me to probation. Whatever happened, he didn't test me. And God saw fit to put me into a program. And during that time at New Visions, and I'm going to tell you, I didn't go in like, oh, I'm so grateful. I'm so willing. I'm going to do whatever, right? No, that has never been my attitude, by the way. That has never been my attitude. But what happened while I was there is I saw some things because I'm always like scanning, right? I'm always listening. I'm always ear hustling for whatever opportunity. That's really what I'm always ear hustling for. But what happened is I was listening and there was somebody there sponsoring somebody and they were sitting across from somebody with the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and they were taking somebody through the 12 steps. And it was a lady named Anna and she was sponsoring somebody named Eva, and I'll never forget it. And this is what I heard. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential requirements. Now, she sat with this person for like an hour and a half. And it makes me want to cry because that day, you know, I was listening, right? I was listening and I heard Anna tell Eva that this solution that they were talking about, this specific set of directions, would solve all of this Eva girl's problems. And I'd heard Eva. She's a hot mess. I was definitely judging her. I was like, this girl's a mess. I mean, I'm way better than her. I knew that. I mean, with me, with my 8 years and my homelessness and my full-on blown addictions, like, I know I'm better than her, right? And if it can solve Eva's problems, it can probably solve mine, right? So I'm ear hustling, right? Because I'm always looking out for myself. I'm going to tell you that I did not enter this process thinking, oh, I want to come to God out of willingness and humility. I want to be an agent of God. Maybe I can help others, right? I did not enter it with that in mind. You know, I'm just going to tell you the truth. I was overhearing and I was judging this girl. And I was listening to this other girl and I was judging her too. And I thought, if it did this for them, imagine what it could do for someone like me. That's what I thought. All right? And I would like to say that I jumped headfirst into this process and I lived happily ever after. But that is not my story. That is never my story. Oh my gosh. I was working with a sponsee last night and she was like all hard on herself because you know how you are. You know how I am when I'm first in this process, full of self-pity, wanting some reassurance from her sponsor. And she was like, are you going to break up with me as a sponsee? I'm just taking so long. And I did throw her some tidbits. I guess she'd been feeling kind of beat up through the 12-step process. And I was telling her, I was like, you know, I don't know why you think the spiritual process is supposed to be a feel-good process, right? I'd been telling her some stuff that, I was sharing my experience. I was like, the spiritual process is not a feel-good process. I don't know why you think you're supposed to be sitting across from me feeling good. But then at the end, I thought, gosh, she's looking kind of mangled. You know, she's looking kind of beat up, you know. Maybe I should offer her some hope so she shows up next week, right? She's looking bad off, you know. Like she might limp out of my living room, right? So I was like, hey, I should tell you what happened to me at this point. So I tell her, I'm like, hey, I think you're thinking that you're not like succeeding at this. And she's like, I'm not. And I was like, oh no. And I'm all smiling. And then I remembered, oh yeah, I used to get so irritated when Stephanie was like smiling and like making coffee while I was sitting over there feeling mangled. And then I felt successful as a sponsor, by the way, because I was all, oh, maybe I'm doing this right. But anyway, so I told her, I was all, hey, don't worry, you're doing fine. By the way, for those people who show up in our home group, by the way, my home group is Primary Purpose. I'm like, for those people who show up in the home group and are like, hey, when I jumped in here and I started this process and I was just so desperate that I just latched on and I never looked back, I go, I'm not one of those people. I jumped in, I started this process, and then I found some relief, and then I left, and then I found some pain because I'm there, and I got disconnected from God. And I found me. And then I got motivated by pain. And I went back because I'm powerless. And I went back and I got reconnected. I started going back through the 12 steps as outlined in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous because that's the only way that I've ever found a solution for my alcoholism and my irritability and my discontent, my spiritual malady. And then I left. And I went through 3 sponsors in Primary Purpose. I left and I went and worked the 12 steps with somebody out of Primary Purpose. And I hated them. And I badmouthed them. And now the sponsors, now my sponsee, she's judging me. I can tell. She's like, oh, wow, I'm not nearly as bad as you. And I'm like, yeah, she's feeling better. And I go, then, yeah. And yeah, I know. I felt like she needed it. And then I said, and then I was super miserable and I wanted to blow my brains out. And I was sober. In a sober state, completely untreated, miserable, separated from alcohol and drugs. And I cried out to God, please help me. And he was like, no, I'm done. And I'm going to stop talking to you. I pointed you in the direction. And I was scared to death that he might actually do that. And I called Stephanie and I was like, please take me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I showed up and I showed up every week and I went through the work. And I'm going to tell you, I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. So It's not that my life doesn't have problems. It's just that I have access to a power that provides me with solutions to these problems. And I don't have to rely on me and all my weird, funky ideas that have never, ever given me any power. So I started drinking at an early age. That's my story. That's my experience. At an early age, as a kid. And I don't know if I was born irritable and discontent. It just feels like I was. And I know that at an early age, I just felt really disconnected from the world. I felt irritable and discontent, like, always. I don't ever remember. When I meet people who are happy, it just freaks me out. I meet people who had a happy childhood. I don't get it. That's their experience. I know people who have them. I don't understand it. It's not my experience. And then I met alcohol, and alcohol made things better. And it worked for a long time. And I liked it. And it made me confident because I felt not confident, and I felt gawky and ugly and skinny and weird. And I had weird thoughts, and I was always in trouble for doing weird, impulsive things and being antisocial and telling people what I really thought. And I found out that people don't want to hear what I really think, ever. And that when I tell them what I really think, I get in more trouble. But alcohol made me not care about that. I started giving long speeches. The longer, the better. And what happened is, I didn't know anything about this allergic reaction, but every time I put alcohol in my system, I had no off switch. And I didn't care. Like I'm telling you, the teens in the 20s, I didn't care. I wasn't looking for the off switch. Other people wanted me to have an off switch, and I didn't care. Judges kept saying, go to programs. The DUIs, you're going to have to do programs. I'm like, nope. Sign my own cards, fake the programs, replace the boyfriends, move the husbands out. I don't care. Anybody who told me I had to stop, they had to go. Moved away from my parents, moved away from the husbands. I will move you out in the middle of the night. I don't care. You tell me I have to stop, you just have to go. And I don't care. I mean, I found people very replaceable. I do not have attachment issues. You know, and that worked for me. It didn't work for others, turns out, but I don't care. I have like that sociopathic tendency when I drink. I don't care. I don't care what you're thinking. I mean, I'll pretend to. Kind of, you know, I can fake it a little bit like this. But I don't. Do you know what I mean? I don't. But what happened is the consequences start getting bigger. You know, you're my people, you understand. The consequences started getting bigger. And the, you know, and so the unmanageability started getting beyond. And so the pain started driving me towards, I actually started trying to quit. And that's when I discovered what hopeless was. Because before that, I thought it was like, so unmanageability had surfaced. You know, I would forget to pay bills. I would run out of money because I would spend it on other things. I was completely irresponsible. I thought I was one of those functioning people. But I mean, I was like really a hot mess. And it just didn't bother me because I was always kind of like loaded and kind of like not attached to feelings. I didn't feel anything. Didn't bother me. The lights went on. Well, we'll figure out how to turn them on tomorrow. You know, committing crimes didn't bother me. I didn't really have a conscience. You know, if your feelings were hurt, that didn't bother me because I didn't have feelings and I wasn't real attached to you. You know, things like that, right? So, but what happened is eventually it started affecting me, you know, and the pain started bothering me. So I did try to stop. I tried to stop and I found out I couldn't because I really thought that I'll stop. I thought, you know, I'll stop. I mean, I was faking all those other rehab attempts. I went to rehab, but that was only because it was convenient for me. You know, and then when I did want to go to rehab, I wanted to go to one of those like Promises or Malibu, like one of those Lindsay Lohan places. You know, I knew what I deserved. I knew what I deserved. It wasn't like Teen Challenge or anything, you know? No, thank you. I know what I'm worth. Come on. And I wasn't being offered any of those places. And so then, no. And so when I did try to quit, it was like this. I found out I couldn't, and that started bothering me. And so then I started telling myself, well, I'll try again later. I'll try again later. And that happened in my early 30s. So between the ages of 30 and 40, I had tried unsuccessfully to stop many, many times. And I was doing other substances too, which made it super painful. So at that point now, I'm drinking around the clock. And other things started happening, like doctors were telling me to stop. And I started having things like I had weird things happen. Like I faced paralysis. You know, I would tell doctors they were wrong. They were like, and I would lie to them. They're like, I'd go in drunk. They're like, do you drink? No. And they were like, you need to stop drinking. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Because I knew, you know what I mean? Like, I knew I couldn't quit. And if they're like recommending, I was like, well, is there anything else you can tell me? And they'd be like, no. And I'm like, I want my money back. You're a terrible doctor. Because that was the thing I couldn't do. And at that point, I'm terrified, right? Which is how I ended up homeless. I mean, I ended up homeless because I couldn't get a job, you know. The boyfriend that was supporting the whole habit, I'm so out of my mind with it, I forget he's supporting the habit. I break up with him. I gave a speech. I walked out. It was a good speech. And then I'm prideful, and I wouldn't go back. I'll live in my car. And I attached a couch to the top so that I would have a place to sit. So, you know, I ended up homeless until the legal intervention. So when I'm sitting there and I was judging the people, right? I was judging the people and I was introduced to this. I was thinking about all those things and all those people and all of that mess, because I really did know that I had tried quitting, and I knew what hopeless was. I knew that I was hopeless and that I couldn't quit on my own, and I had no power over this. And I knew that I had no off switch, and I knew I was really terrified to end up back on the streets. And I knew that I was completely out of options, and I knew that I had looked at my kids and promised, right? And so I knew that I had tried stopping for legal reasons and for family reasons. I knew I had tried stopping for all of those reasons, and that with all of my own might and power and love of family and love of the dog and love of everybody. And for all these good men, you know, good men, good homes, for all of them, I had tried and I had failed. So I was ready. I was ready. And I heard that, and I was ready to take these steps. And then even in sobriety, right, here I am. I'm managing my own life in sobriety, and I tried these weird solutions in sobriety. Now I'm recovered, and I'm trying to like do the same things. Here I am in sobriety, and I'm mangling my life. So irritating to me, right? I meet this guy. He's got years of sobriety. Can't I just catch some of that? Right? I marry him. And he's not making me happy. And once again, I'm faced with the same things in sobriety. Do you know how pissed I am? Like, here I am in sobriety, and I have nobody to blame it on. And I'm faced with it. And I actually have, now I know. Like now, but it's so freeing, because now I'm faced with, I actually have, because I realize I'm playing God in my life. That was so awesome. That was so amazing. I'm so grateful for that experience. I'm so grateful that the pain of marriage, you know, that the pain of me in my marriage trying to play God and control my own happiness actually brought me to God and brought me to the 12-step process, so that I could actually go through the 12 steps and develop this relationship and go through the work, and I could see where I was powerless over all of these problems and solutions. And I wasn't just powerless, because I thought I was just powerless over alcohol and that I had all this other power. and how much freedom I have in knowing that I'm powerless over everything and that I can turn to God and He has power over my whole life. And every day now, it's like, I just was telling my husband, it's like, I just invite God into my life and into my marriage and into my home and into my kids, and I turn everything over to Him. And step two, where I became willing to believe that, prepared me to do this inventory, and it wasn't where I was taking an inventory of the people sitting across from me. Oh, okay. And so, when I first started this process, I wanted to do an inventory, but I wanted to do all of my ex's inventory, and I wanted somebody to listen to me whine. And when I got to do an inventory and get free from all of this weird stuff, all of this crap, and that I got to be get prepared to get even closer to God and get prepared to do these amends that would set others free from all this weird antisocial sociopathic behavior that I had done. And I got to be prepared to get separated from these defects of character, if God saw fit to separate me from any defects of character that He thought, not the ones that I thought, because God actually uses the things that I think are wrong with me. He uses them all the time. This weird mouth, this obnoxious behavior, God uses it. You know, all these things that I've been trying to run from my whole life, God uses them. You know? And I never ever once thought that God would be able to use me to help anybody. I've always been very self-serving, right? I've always been out for number one. And God uses all these things that I've always hated about myself, my loud, annoying personality, and He uses them, and people are like, seek me out and want me to help them. And I'm like, okay. And He, all the things that I don't like about me, He seems to be able to find use for them. And then whenever He's ready to separate me from something, He reveals it to me and He removes it. And that's amazing. When I hear people talking about working on themselves, I'm like, oh, that's painful. I did that for years. I did that for years. Good luck with that. It's like carrying a big boulder up a hill and it keeps running me over. Yeah. Tell me when you're done doing that and I'll take you through the 12 steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and you'll get free from that crap. Yeah. You'll quit getting run over by that boulder. And then I thought that the eighth step was about, I don't know what I thought it was, but I'm going to tell you that when I went out and when I made a list and I started making amends, well, first my son said, how long have you been in the 12-step program? Because it's been years, right? There's only 12 steps. Like, what step are you on? Like, you know, you're kind of a slow learner, right? And I was like, that's fair. That's fair, right? But I will tell you that there was a lot of fear. I had a lot of fear. I called my sponsor. I called her husband. You know, they said things to me that I didn't want to hear. They told me to pray. I was like, that can't possibly be what the book says. You know, because I've had a lot of treatment and stuff, and sometimes I do want to hear some treatment crap, like, we'll love you. They never tell me stuff like that. They're like, well, let's open the book. Let's follow the directions, which is always exactly what I need to hear. Turn to God. I'm so grateful that my sponsor never ever taught me to rely on her, but always taught me to rely on God. That's the first thing I always tell my sponsor, my sponsees. I can do nothing for you, but I can connect you to a power who can. I can do nothing for you. I'm nothing. I'm not even a nice person. I'm not. I'm very self-serving. I mean, every day I'm just like, God, please remove me from me and just come into my life and reflect you. That's it. Stop me. More you. Go, God. You know? And let's do this. Right? And they still want to work with me. I'm so grateful for my sponsor. I'm so grateful for her husband. I'm so grateful for my home group. I'm so grateful for everyone who's ever taken the time to work for me, but take me through the steps. I'm so grateful for anybody who's ever taken the time. I'm so grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so grateful for my husband. I'm so grateful for the people in this room. I can't even tell you. Tonight, my father in Arkansas, he sent me a private message on Facebook. I'm so proud of him knowing how to use all that. And he calls me Tutor. He calls me Tutor Bug. He goes, Tutor Bug, today's your sobriety birthday. You're a miracle. I never thought that I'd be this proud of you. And when I was incarcerated, he sent me a letter and he said, Tutor, I don't know why you did what you did, and I'm very ashamed of what you did, but I love you. I just don't understand you. He sent me that letter when I was incarcerated. It was like 7 years ago, and I was devastated. True shame, true shame. So today, when I got that message, I didn't even know that he knew it was my sobriety birthday. And it's like a 3-hour time difference, you know. And I was like, what's the old man doing up? Look at him. Look at us. Thank God for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you, God. And today, I came home from work. Let's talk about that. That's a miracle. I told you I was incarcerated. Clearly, I have a record. You know that was an act of faith. That was some fear filling out that application. And I was encouraged by a lot of people in this room and a lot of people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like, how did I do it? They were like, tell the truth. I was like, what? That'll never work. They were like, do it. Tell the truth. I was like, they were like, God will open the doors. This is God. And I was like, oh, that's right. And I did. And he did. In his time, and let me tell you, it wasn't mine, and I'm real grateful for that. So, again, I go back to page 13, because I've heard some weird things in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have. I've heard them say things like, we are only here, it'll only solve the drink problem. What a bunch of crap that is. I've heard them say that after I shared that God solved all of my problems. I heard somebody come up behind me and go, we're here to only solve the drink problem. I didn't respond because that's not my job. But I'll respond here and just say that I am going to take a moment to respond here and say I'll only talk about what's in the book. And on page 13 it says that it solves all of our problems. It mentions that several times. I don't know. Disregard some of the things you hear in the meetings and go through this book. And if you get a sponsor, I know for me, going through this book line by line with a qualified sponsor is how it worked for me. That's how my sponsors do it. That's how the people from Primary Purpose do it. That's what worked for me. That's my experience. That's how I had an effective experience with the book. We turn these statements into questions, and we have an experience. And my life has not been the same. And I've never, and working with others is something that I do. It's not something that I dread. It's just not something that I think about. It's something that when my sponsor started working with me, she said, I'm going to take you through the steps, but you have to work with others. And she talked to me about the circle and the triangle and being in the circle and the triangle. And I saw people in my own home group leave. You know, you can become recovered and you can become unrecovered, you know. So there's a promise, you know. You can be connected to God, but you have to stay in the circle and the triangle. And if you want to stay connected to God, you have to continue to work with others. You can't just come in here, work the 12 steps, and then stop working with others and hang out in meetings and think that that's going to be enough. The book is full of specific instructions. So, you know, some people think like, oh, you kind of go on about those 12 steps. I've been told that before. Yes, I do, because I think that you'll die in this disease. I think that this is a life or death disease. I think that if you want to quit drinking and you can't quit on your own, if you can quit on your own, I don't know why you're hanging out in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you can quit on your own, I don't even know why you'd be at a meeting. I mean, if you can quit on your own, you should just be at home with your family. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who have no power over alcohol. And if you need power, then this 12-step process can connect you to a power greater than yourself. And for me, I had no power. And for me, I have a connection to a power that's greater than me that has just turned my life around. And that's my story.